Nothing lights us up more than helping people grow their wealth through multifamily investing in a way that actually feels good and makes sense where they are right now. That's exactly why we created the Where Am I Now Multifamily Assessment.
Here's the thing, no two journeys ever look the same. Maybe you're just starting out and simply curious about what's possible. Maybe you're dipping your toes into your really first passive investment, or maybe you're craving that behind the scenes peek at how it all works.
You might even be gearing up to go big and acquire your first deal, or ready to scale your portfolio to new heights by teaming up with strong partners who can help you grow like never before.
Instead of tossing you one size fits all advice, boring and not helpful, this assessment zooms in on your exact stage of growth.
It helps us get to know your goals, your challenges, and what gets you most excited about building wealth through multifamily investing, so we can hand over the tools, resources, and support that actually moves the needle for you.
The best part? It only takes a few minutes, but the clarity you walk away with, that's the magic. Think of it as your roadmap to what's next.
Ready? Head to kittysisters.com/whereaminow to get started. That's kittysisters.com/whereaminow.
Have you ever wondered why some families stay wealthy for generations, while others go from billions to broke in just three generations? Today, I'm going to reveal the shocking truth behind two of America's most famous dynasties and how you can use their story to make your wealth last 100 years. What I'm about to share with you isn't just a history lesson. It's a warning and a roadmap. Here's the brutal fact. 90% of wealthy families lose their fortune by the third generation.
I'm Pommy.
And I'm Nancy.
Together we make the Kitty Sisters. We're apartment syndicators, entrepreneurs, and educators with big dreams and a $300 million multifamily apartment portfolio. We're into helping successful entrepreneurs and founders who have a passion for real estate and $100K to $5 million to invest, all aiming to turn their business profits into a lasting legacy through income-producing asset investment. This is Cashflow Multipliers, a podcast dedicated to your financial freedom and the lifestyle you deserve.
I'm Palmy Kitty, and along with my sister Nancy, we built a $400 million real estate empire, and we've helped thousands of families protect and grow their generational wealth. Today, we'll unpack why the Rockefellers are still billionaires and how the Vanderbilts lost a fortune so large it was once bigger than the U.S. Treasury itself. You see, when Cornelius Vanderbilt died in 1877, he left behind a fortune so vast it eclipsed the U.S. Treasury, roughly $200 million in 19th century dollars, or about $5.8 billion today, if you prefer your tragedy adjusted for inflation. He built this empire the old-fashioned way, by owning things that actually move people, namely ships and trains. A few decades later, along came John D. Rockefeller, the man who cornered the market not in transportation, but the stuff that powered it, oil, the black gold, the juice of the industrial age. Both men started with humble beginnings, ended up wealthier than some small countries, but what happened next couldn't be more different. To understand how one of America's greatest fortune could vanish in just a few generations, we need to borrow a metaphor from nature. Enter the locust. Locusts are nature's symbol of sudden, uncontrolled consumption. They swarm in vast numbers, descend on fertile land, and strip it bare. In a matter of hours, entire harvests are devoured. What they leave behind is not just emptiness, but devastation. A field that once had potential, now scorched by overindulgence. As the prophet Joel wrote, what the great locust has left, the young locust has eaten. What the young locust has left, other locusts have eaten. Joel 1:4. It's a haunting image, layer after layer of consumption, until there's simply nothing left. And tragically, that's precisely the arc the Vanderbilt fortune followed. The Vanderbilts were in many ways, locusts in bow ties. They arrived suddenly, consumed extravagantly, and left little more than stories and real estate tour brochures. They spent with no plan. They built the most extravagant homes in America, like the Breakers, which would cost $77 million to build today. They threw lavish parties. They lived like royalties, but they weren't reinvesting. They were consuming. By the third generation, they were spending more than their money could earn. By 1973, at the Vanderbilt family reunion, not one single member was still a millionaire. When Gloria Vanderbilt, fashion icon, socialite, and one-time heiress, died in 2019, her estate was worth just $1.5 million. From $200 million to barely enough for a Manhattan condo. That's not just loss. That's generational mismanagement. No structure, no system, no strategy, just short-term splendor, funded by long-term oblivion. Like a locust swarm, the Vanderbilts operated in a frenzy of abundance, consuming rapidly, reproducing status, and vanishing with nothing sustainable left behind. Their legacy wasn't preserved, it was burned through. If locusts represent consumption without conservation, then bees represent the exact opposite. Their brilliance lies in their design. Their behavior nature is communal, productive, and regenerative, and it leaves behind something farther than they take. Honeybees are one of nature's most disciplined builders. They don't just collect, they engineer. They create intricate hives, store precious resources, and operate in perfect cooperation. And in doing so, they also pollinate the world. Their labor feeds not only their own colonies, but entire ecosystems. Bees are legacy-minded. Their work outlasts their lives. Now compare that to the Rockefellers, a colony of honeybees wearing pinstripe suits. John D. Rockefellers understood this. John D. didn't just accumulate wealth, he structured it. He protected it. He built generational skipping trusts before estate taxes even existed. Not because he had to, but because he foresaw that the absence of planning is a tax all in its own. He created a family constitution. He taught his heirs to work, to contribute, and to earn. He built a culture where you didn't inherit access, you inherited responsibility. And perhaps most brilliantly, he reinvested. Not in showy estates or fleeting status, but in assets that produce more assets. While the Vanderbilts mistook capital for cash, the Rockefellers treated capital like a seed. You see, you plant it, you water it, and you never eat the seed. The hives continue to operate quietly, compounding, quietly influencing, quietly sustaining. And that's where the difference becomes not just visible, but generationally irreversible. You don't need a $1 billion oil empire to use the Rockefeller's method. You just need a structure intentionally and the courage to do what most families avoid. Let me break it down. Pillar one, create your wealth preservation vehicle. Let me tell you a quick story. This pillar is so important, and I'll be honest, before I got into real estate, I had no idea it existed. Call me ignorant, but I didn't even know what the word probate meant. Let me explain why that ignorance is so expensive. Probate is what happens when someone passes away without proper documentation. No living trust, no will, no structure. And in that case, the wealth of the deceased doesn't go to their family automatically. It goes to the courts, who then decide who gets what. And here's what really is troubling. The process isn't just slow and emotionally exhausting. It's also brutally expensive. Attorney fees, court costs, and paperwork. The loss is staggering. Easily 50 to 60% of the value of the estate gone. Back when we were flipping houses, we saw this all the time. Families would inherit million-dollar homes owned free and clear. But after probate, they may walk away with maybe $400,000. That's why this first pillar isn't optional. It's foundational. And maybe in the past, it was complex and costly to set up. But today, there are dozens of legal platforms online that makes it simple and affordable. Every family, yours included, need to take this step. And that's precisely why John D. Rockefeller didn't leave things to chance or to probate. While others were busy admiring their fortunes, he was busy engineering theirs to outlast them. He set up trust before estate taxes even existed because he understood something timeless. And it started with talking to a knowledgeable estate planning attorney. Depending on your situation, you may want to explore a family LLC or LP to hold the real estate or investments, an irrevocable trust to safeguard legacy and avoid estate taxes, or a living trust to bypass probate and get started with your planning today. You don't need billions to protect your wealth. You just need to start building the right container for it. Pillar number two, establish your family financial constitution. Let's get something clear right up front. Getting pillar one right is a brilliant start. You finally got the plumbing installed for your financial rain bucket. Great. But this is where it gets heartbreakingly ironic. If you skip pillar two, you might still lose it all. Before we dive into this strategy, let's get personal. And I know you're just listening to me right now, maybe nodding along, but I need you to feel this. So do me a favor, close your eyes for a second and picture your son or daughter at 3 years old. See the way their eyes light up when they run into your arms? Hear the giggle that could melt steel? Now, truly imagine what life might look like for them if you were to meet an early demise. That sudden absence, that look of confusion, the fear in the eyes when they realize you're not coming back, the panic, the silence, the uncertainty. That's what happens when we don't prepare. That's the gut punch reality of not having a plan. Even if it feels hard to start, even if it feels awkward, just remember that little three-year-old face and make the conversation about money, wealth, and protection not optional, but urgent, because preparation is love in action. Now, we've seen this too often. It usually starts with a mom and dad who clawed their way up the mountain from survival to surplus. They ate instant noodles so that their kid could one day eat filet mignon. They turned economic famine into a family feast. But somewhere along the line, they made the fatal misstep. They stopped the conversation. Out of fear that their kids would be spoiled or too money-minded, they treat money talk like it was radioactive. The result? A well-intentioned silence that turned wealth into a mystery. And when wealth is a mystery, it becomes misunderstood. When it's misunderstood, it gets misused. And when it gets misused, it vanishes. We've seen families whose kids had all the tools, IQ, EQ, opportunity, and none of the training. And we've seen the opposite too. One family, you know, came to the United States as refugees. They started with nothing. And quite literally, through decades of hard work and discipline, they became 10 to millionaires. That's right. Now, you might expect their son to be spoiled, boastful, maybe even checked out. But he's the complete opposite. He's humble. He's strategic. He understands that being born into wealth doesn't make him wealthy. Being responsible with it does. He even helped his family set up their own family office. and help restructure their finances for the next generation. And none of that would have happened if they hadn't had those critical conversations early and often. Let's be honest, money talks feels awkward in most families. Some feel it's rude, greedy, or even taboo. But here's the irony. We spend most of our lives working for money, then avoid discussing the very thing we give our lives for. That silence trains the next generation for fear of money conversation, and that guarantees that they'll have less of it. At our house, we love money talks because money isn't value. It's a store of value, a tool, like a knife. Use it well and feeds the family. Use wrong, it can cause harm. Your job isn't to hide the knife. It's to teach its responsible use. And that's why we recommend creating a family constitution, a written framework of financial values, decision-making rules, inheritance expectation, conflict resolution guides. And we know it's not easy to do it alone. So we created a free AbLib style workbook to help you write your family constitution in under an hour. The link is in the description below, because the greatest legacy isn't money, it's mindset. Pillar 3, adopt the investor mindset. Now that we've installed the pipes, the structure, and turn on the tap conversation, it's time to let the water flow, because preparation without action is like owning a Ferrari and never leaving the driveway. This third pillar is where theory becomes theater, where your financial philosophy gets off the couch and put on some pair of running shoes. Let me explain this in the most California way, with fishing in the Pacific Ocean. Imagine you're heading out at dawn, bobbing just off the coast of Southern California. The ocean's glassy, the air smells like salt and ambition. You've got rod, you've got bait, you've got the best intentions. Maybe you're after a calico bass or a yellowtail, or if you're lucky, might be even a bluefin tuna. And what's more, sometimes you even use smaller fish, sardines or mackerel, to lure in the bigger beasts. That, my friend, is investing. You deploy some capital, bait, in hope that it'll attract more. But here's where it all goes belly up. You're catching fish, fine specimens. You're imagining on Instagram posts already, but there's a hole in your bucket, a big one. And before you even go back to shore, half of the catches have already slipped away. That, my friend, is what happens when you invest without tax efficiency. Because growing wealth is hard enough, but keeping it, that's sport played in a different league. We've helped our investors save over $93 million in taxes, not with wizardry, but with intention, legal structure, strategic thinking, choosing the right investment vehicle, not just the shiniest one. It's not about how much you make, it's about how much you keep. And here's where your mindset must graduate from mere earner to orchestrator. If you want your wealth to last a century, you must start thinking like an investor, and not just any investor, but one who treats taxes the way a general treats terrain, something to be studied, mapped, and outmaneuvered. There are four elegant and historically effective ways to separate your income, but one won't allow you to separate your income from your time. Let's go over them now. Path one, other people's money, your business. This is how we scaled to 400 million. We raised capital not just because we had a project, but because we had a vision, one compelling enough to attract belief and investment. Path two, your money on other people's business. Stocks, real estate, startups. You're not building a rocket. You're smart enough to just buy a seat. Path three, other people's money, other people's business. Private equity, fund managers, syndications. This is one of our favorites, and not just because it's sophisticated. This is because it's tax efficient, streamlined, and delightfully hands-off. Path four, your money, your business. Yes, the bootstrap path. All risk, all rewards. You're the engine, the operator, and the liability policy all built into one. Implementing all three pillars will help you get on your way to creating a 100-year legacy.
We can't wait to begin this journey with you. Check us out at thekittysisters.com/podcast.